Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and you're listening to the Downtime Podcast, where we delve deep into the gravity-based side of mountain biking. This week, the podcast is supported by We Are One Composites. I'm running the We Are One Composites Faction 29er wheels on my bike and I'm loving them. To start off, the finish is incredible, so you know that We Are One care about the quality of what they're doing. That's backed up in the engineering, as the ride quality of the wheels is second to none. They're direct, holding lines and going where you put them, but they have enough flexibility that they aren't punishing to ride and they don't ping you off every little trail obstacle like some of the stiffer carbon rims on the market. If you're interested in getting your hands on some amazing We Are One carbon gear, then as a Downtime listener, you can get 15% off all stock items during September using the code GIVER15OFF at the checkout. That's GIVER15OFF over at weareonecomposites.com. Head there now and check out what they have to offer. There isn't much of September left, so be quick. As autumn has hit here in the UK, I've updated my web store with some lovely sweatshirts and hoodies. They're super cosy, 100% organic, printed to order and shipped with no single-use plastic. To get your hands on one, just head to downtimepodcast.com/shop now. There's also four different t-shirt designs there to choose from if you're keen on those too. Don't forget to make sure you're subscribed to the show. It's free and it means you'll get every episode as soon as it drops. It's really easy to do with buttons for all the major platforms over at downtimepodcast.com/subscribe. While you're on that page, you can also join my newsletter for a weekly dose of interesting bike-related stuff, competitions, products I've been enjoying, and more. Also, if you've got time to give the podcast a quick review over on iTunes, then that's massively appreciated as it really does help others find the show. All right, this week I'm joined by Junior Da Vinci Factory Racing's Keegan Wright. Keegan is one of a crop of fast Kiwi riders who've shown the ability to do well in multiple disciplines. We chat about his background in BMX, the support he had to get into mountain biking, tips for getting into a race mindset, crankworks, EWS, overtraining, wrestling injuries, and more. Keegan is full of energy and enthusiasm, and I really enjoyed chatting with him. So, without further ado, here's Keegan Wright. Keegan Wright, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. How's things with you?
Hey, what's up, dude? Yeah, man, things are good, thank you. Been a hectic day, but I'm stoked to get on the podcast with you guys and chat some banter.
Nice one. Good stuff, man. Well, let's start off by winding the clock back a little bit then, and just tell us a little bit about life growing up and how riding became part of your life.
Yeah, man. So, so pretty much I would have been about 3 or 4 when I first saw bikes. It was, the motocross was the first thing that caught my eye as a little fella. And I hit up my mum and dad and was like, oh, can I get a motorbike? I really want to do it. And, yeah, it was pretty much a definite no from my mum. And, she said, no, it's too dangerous and too expensive. And, my dad was on the edge, obviously, you know, being a dad, he wants his son to get into probably some extreme sport of some sort. So yeah, I was just a little fella and, I was searching then if I couldn't do motocross, I was looking for the next best thing. And that's when, one day we were rolling around in town and I saw some kids on some BMX bikes and, yeah, I would have been about four years old when I spotted bikes, and that's when I went to mum and dad again, and you know, after a few months of seeing the motocross and getting told no about that, I was like, oh well, let's try with bikes then. And yeah, my mum was like, oh, all right then. So it would have been the Christmas that was coming up, and they surprised me with a bike for Christmas, and ever since it's been an awesome gig, and I've just been cracking on with it. I was racing BMX from when I was about 5 years old until I was about 13 or 14, and then I had about a year off of bikes, just kind of hanging out and doing my thing and just kind of learning different things in life. And that's when one of my good friends, Des Curry, he's a ex downhill racer and ex World Cup racer. He, came up to me and he said, you know, like, why don't we get you on a downhill bike? And I said to him at the time, I was like, oh, there's no way I can afford a downhill bike at this time of my life. So I'm going to have to give it a miss, I think. And then he was like, oh, I've got plenty of bikes and I'll give you one of mine. And, ever since I've hopped on a downhill bike from when I was about 16 years old, I've never looked back from mountain biking. It's just been the best decision I've made in my life, I think.
Sweet. How are you getting on in BMX? Were you pretty competitive?
Yeah, well, I definitely wasn't a talented kid, that's for sure. I worked for everything that I got, and I went from being when I was about 5 or 6 years old to when I was about 10, probably being 30th in New Zealand, and then from when I was about 10 onwards, I sort of went up dramatically. I kind of went from being 30th in New Zealand to being the New Zealand champion for BMX racing, and I did the Mighty 11s, which is 5 on 5, 5 New Zealanders that are 11-year-olds and 5 Australians that are 11-year-olds versing each other head-to-head to win the a Mighty 11 title, which is a title they put in place for a 11-year-old boy that had an accident and died when he was racing BMX. So I'm not too sure if it was a crash from BMX or an incident kind of traveling for BMX, but yeah, that's when they put that that title in place, and from there onwards I went to the World Championships 2 times, and I made it to the semi-finals for that, which is the top 14 in the world, and then the rest was when I was 13 I did the test team, which is Australia New Zealand thing, and that's when I had a few problems actually with my BMX. I was running a certain brand of hub, and I was just coming out of the start gate, and the when I was putting my first or second pedal stroke down, the hub like teeth wouldn't engage. And it was just throwing me over the bars, man, and it was just smashing me. I went over the bars out of the start gate probably 5 or 6 times, and I smashed my shoulder up. And, that's kind of when I was sort of looked at it and was like, oh, I don't know if I want to keep doing this. And I kept riding for a few months after it, and it was still happening. And I took the hub apart, and I tried getting a different brand hub, and well, not a different brand hub, but the same hub, but just a different one, and it would do it again. And that's kind of, I just got over crashing, and it kind of almost kind of made me not trust the BMX anymore. So that's when I, sort of hung that up. And I actually, when I got on off the BMX, I was kind of like, I kind of felt a little bit lost, if I was being honest, because I did BMX for so long in my life that I kind of, it was a, you know what biking's like, it's when you're riding and you're so passionate about something, it's sort of, it takes over your whole life. And when I got off BMX racing and wasn't training for like, you know, any races or anything coming up anymore, I kind of got a little bit lost, and was wondering what to do with myself. So I got a job working at McDonald's for like 3 weeks, and and they told me to get a haircut, and I was like, what? You know, like, I'm not going to get a haircut. And they're like, oh, well, don't bother coming back then. And I didn't end up going back because they wanted me to get a haircut, and I've always liked long hair. And then so then I got a job at a local grocery store, and I just worked my way and just was doing that for a little bit until, my friend Des came up and sort of, offered me the bike. And, I've found my path and my passion since then, and I found myself again, which is super rad.
Nice one. So yeah, what was your first ride on a downhill bike like then? Do you remember it?
Oh man, it was the loosest, scariest thing I think of I ever did, because the guy Des Curry, I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he was sort of in the era of like well, there was like John Cacaldi and Nathan Rankin and Justin Leov and all those boys, and they were all in a similar age range. And John Cacaldi, obviously, he was a bit older and sort of paved the way for those guys as well. And yeah, he was a loose cannon, man. This Des guy that I met at the BMX track, he just rode flat pedals, and he rode for the Turner Maxxis Factory American team back in the day. And he had an old square Turner frame, a new old frame, but with some new parts on it, like the titanium Mazzocchi fork and stuff like that, and some Adam Lab rims and stuff like that. And I just, had gold rims on it, and I thought it was the sickest thing on the scene, and especially after coming from BMX and hopping on a downhill bike, I was like, oh, this is just going to rip and have so, I'm going to have so much fun. And I got on and I followed him down, and within like 5 or 6 runs, I don't know how many times I crashed, like just trying to keep up with him. And, you know, like it was hectic. But yeah, I don't even know. Like, it wasn't until a few weeks after he was telling me how many cracks that frame had in it, because he just like would thrash it over time. And he was like, as I got faster and faster on the down bike, he would just like be like, oh no, I don't know if I like, I trust you on this thing. So he was a welder for the Turner, and he just he took it into his shop, and he would get like these aluminium plates and put them over the like where the cracks were and just weld it up. Like, it wasn't even a proper weld, and he would just like get me going again. And it was, yeah, for the first year and a half, 2 years, it was the first bike, well, the only bike that I had. And yeah, it was just a single pivot, and it was rad, man. Like, even thinking back now of all the bikes that I've ridden, like, it's such a memorable bike. And I don't know, I feel like the first bikes are where you can make some awesome memories, and I definitely made heaps of rad memories on that thing.
Nice. Did you start racing it as well then? Yeah, pretty quickly.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So I literally came from yeah, not doing, just riding like a jump bike around. And when Des gave me the downhill bike, I went to racing some of the downhill national rounds and stuff like that. And yeah, it was because I started quite late. Like, I had a trail bike and stuff like that for a little while. And then when I got into the downhill stuff, like, I was coming into my first year junior when it was like my second or so year, right, like riding downhill. So yeah. I couldn't really leave myself resting on my laurels for too long, because like, I heard that there was the junior world champs and the junior world cups, and obviously you only get 2 years of doing that. And then from there, it's sort of like, that's when you're up with the adults and doing that thing. So I kind of was looking at it when I was 16 years old, sort of like, oh, I've got 2 years to try to get a little name for myself or whatever, if I want to try to make this my job. And then, yeah, I did that, and I won the, my second year national champs and my second year Oceania title. And my first national champs, I won the seeding for that, but got rowdy and just had a big crash in the race run. And but yeah, then once the enduro world series thing kicked off, I obviously had a good hard look at that, and that kind of ended up being the direction that I chose, as well as doing the crankwork stops as well.
Yeah, fair play. Yeah, let's so go back 2014. Like you say, you took the under 90 New Zealand National Championships, and it was also your first trip to a downhill World Cup, I think, in Cairns.
Yeah, man.
How was that?
Yeah, that was an eye opener for sure. Like, kind of, you know, when you take 5 or 6 people out of six or seven people from each country in the world could go to World Cups or World Champs as a junior. And yeah, when you take 5 or 6 to 7 people from each country and they're all the fastest from that country, it kind of, yeah, you kind of get there. And coming from little old New Zealand, you know, we're fast on our tracks here, but when you get put on a track and terrain that you're totally uncomfortable or unknown of, it's kind of, yeah, for us and me and the other juniors from New Zealand, the deep end. But, you know, we've got such a good scene of the elite dudes in New Zealand, which, you know, they tried giving us as much as a heads up as we could, but us being juniors, you know, when you're a little kid, you're like, oh yeah, whatever, we're all good, we're fast and whatever. But then you get there and it was like, oh, maybe not. So so yeah, that was an eye-opener of a race for sure. And kind of going, it changed from, it was a dry practice, and then for the second day of practice, it started raining, I think. And yeah, it changed things drastically, being like it was sort of like a clay based track, and there was roots everywhere. And I just remember coming into the final, like there was a final jump before the big pedal highway at the end. And there was like a triple, and there was only like, it was like Troy Brosnan and I think someone else hit this triple, and because it was muddy, it was just so soft, the running, and it was hard to get speed. And yeah, I was clipped in, and I was just like, I sprinted into it. And I was like, I'm going to send it. And I had the gnarliest 50-50 case I've ever had. And both of my feet came out of my shoes. And I, cause I was born with talipes, which is like, when I was born, my foot was twisted backwards and upside down. And, yeah, that sort of, it doesn't have the movement so much as what a normal foot has. And yeah, I remember that I thought I was going to be out because of that impact of the race, because my ankle was just so bruised and swollen from that impact. And I ended up having to race with one foot clipped in and one foot on a flat shoe to just so I could ride. And I was literally riding the race with my the foot that was on the flat, pretty much like on the heel of my foot, because if I was sitting on the pedal of like the ball of my foot, it would just hurt too much from the flex in the ankle.
Whoa. So, you ended up getting eighth place as well.
Surprisingly it worked out all right, because it was so muddy, and having a foot in the flat pedals sort of just kind of helped a little bit. But yeah, it was kind of weird for sure, being clipped in one and flats on the other. But but yeah, it was such a cool race. And like, I miss those like junior days of downhill racing with all the, there's so many names that were riding back then and have just gone out of it, and you make these cool little memories of the people. But then you see the different paths that, you know, some of them have gone of their lives now, and other people still in the sport, and it's cool. It's yeah, there's something like you go out racing every year now, and you get to go to all the destinations and, you know, with the team and stuff like that, and they're very memorable moments. But even the ones just as juniors, I wouldn't you know, like, I wouldn't put that past as being some of the best moments I've had of with racing, because, you know, you're just a kid and you're going out with your parents or whatever and exploring the world. It was yeah, it was pretty surreal.
Yeah, super cool. I mean, you traveled quite a lot in that 2014 season. You got over to Europe, you did a few kind of, I think, IXS and World Cup rounds and World Champs. How was it all funded at that point? Was it purely kind of support from parents, or did you have other help?
Yeah, so it would have been that year and the year after. It was all funded by my mum and dad. And my my mum wasn't really a big traveler, and she kind of didn't like coming to the races, because she was always had in her head that she would make me nervous, and she would make me feel like, oh, I had to push harder. So I'd like, if I crashed, she always thought that it was her fault. So she never would want to come to the races, even though she was like fully supportive of me and she would fund it and stuff like that. She never really came to races, but my dad was the one that came to all the races with me that year and the years previously as well. And yeah, that was just all funded by my mum and dad. Obviously, they saw the passion and the dream that I had, and they just wanted to help out as much as they could where they could. And obviously there was I had like a little bit of support from like Giant New Zealand Bikes and stuff like that, and they helped me out with product. Like, I would get a bike and then I could either sell the bike at the end of the year and give them the money, or they'll just send me an invoice for that bike if I wanted to keep it. And it was all funded by mum and dad. And obviously I was doing my little bits and bobs at like the grocery store trying to save money. But as being a kid, I was saving as much as I could. But when I was trying to train and ride and all that, what I was doing for work wise probably only added up to enough to just buy me food for like a week or two in Europe.
Yeah, it's not a cheap sport, is it?
No way, man. It's definitely on the expense side. You can have so much fun in the sport though, as I look at it, it's probably such a cheap like fun activity when you look at it. Like, obviously the bike's quite expensive, but when you think of the countless amount of hours you can have on that thing, and you know, it's such fresh, good outdoor such a good fresh outdoor activity. It's I don't know, I don't even know how much there's too much to put into the sport, to be honest.
yeah fair play. So 2015 then you moved up to elite, and I think you just did a couple of World Cups in that season, Fort William and Leagang. How was it moving up from the junior ranks into the elite ranks?
Yeah, it was definitely a again, it was just a massive eye opener, kind of going from even when it was like my first junior race going overseas, it was an eye opener then, and then going from a junior to the elite ranks, that's when you kind of get put in with the big boys, and you've either got to try to step up your game or you kind of get lost in the pack. But It was an eye opener for me. They always say there's a lot of people that say, you know, like the pressure of going from junior to elite can get to a lot of the younger riders and stuff like that. And I never thought it was as bad as what it actually was. Like the pressure that you get when you're on a start gate and you kind of like you're racing the names of the, you know, like the Sam Blingensops and Greg Menars and Josh Briceland, Sam Hill and stuff like that. I guess it's just like it gets put to the back of your mind because you're worrying about yourself, but there's always something in the back of your mind, I think, that kind of does play little tricks of you and stuff like that. And I think it took a couple of years, like I'm still learning now how to turn on my race mind and stuff when I'm overseas compared to how I race when I'm in New Zealand. But I think, I don't know if anyone's perfected it apart from a couple of people.
Yeah, even those people, I think occasionally it doesn't work out. It's not a foolproof system, right?
No, for sure, man. Everyone's always getting faster and faster and pushing the limits, and yeah, I think that's what always what keeps all the racers and the riders always thinking and kind of gets their nerves running before the season, you know, like whether it's knowing if they've got the speed from the off season and their training, or if they've had too much of a relaxed off season and if they're going to get smashed. And yeah, I don't know, there's always nerves playing about, and I think it's just whoever can control the nerves the best.
Yeah, have you found anything then that works for you that helps you get into that race mindset?
Yeah, well, there's been a couple of things where I've like whether it's like breathing, having big breaths before the start, or the biggest thing that I've found, man, is just wearing listening to music as much as I can. Like if we're allowed to wear it during races, then I'll wear it for the races, and if we're not, then I'll just have my headphones in before the start and just try to jam like some good like hip hop flow music and just try to get into a good rhythm and listen to the beat sort of thing and just try to find the flow from there, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. So in an EWS, for example, would you take a small set of headphones with you to listen before each stage, or you just get kind of pumped before the day? How would that work?
Oh, for sure, man. I've always got my Scow Candy headphones with me. Like they literally, if I don't have my headphones, like whenever I pack my clothes and all that for the day of racing, I've always got my clothes. I've got like a couple of energy gels, and I've got my food. And I've got a packet of chewing gum and my Scow Candy headphones. And those are the two things that keep me like occupied throughout the whole day.
Really? Fair play. So the chewing gum, is that like a nervous thing? Does it kind of give you something to do?
I don't know. It's weird. It's something that I've always done. Like even when I just go out for like 5 or 6 hour trail rides, or even like massive trail rides. And I've just, for the riding up the hills and stuff like that, I've always got chewing gum. I don't know if it's because it keeps kind of like my mouth, keeps the moisture in my mouth, or if it's just because of the boredom thing or what, but for some reason I've always seemed to, like, even if I don't think about it, I've always got chewing gum on me when I'm out riding.
Yeah, fair play. That's an interesting one. I mean, I've never heard that before. You've never accidentally swallowed it then?
I'm not too sure, to be honest, because sometimes I forget about it and I ride down the stage with it, and that's like, it's, even though it's dangerous, it's actually been cool. Like, it's actually been an eye opener, like how, like sometimes from the breathing and stuff, you can get quite a dry mouth. And when I've ridden down with chewing gum before, it kind of helps with it kind of made me focus on my breathing more and stuff like that as well. But I'd say I've swallowed my chewing gum a countless amount of times, but fingers crossed and touch wood, I've never choked on it.
Fair play. Do you think it helps you focus on breathing through your nose then, if you've got something in your mouth like that?
Yeah, well, I think it does. Like, and whenever I I'm known, like, I've always been quite a big, like, a heavy mouth breather when I listen to my GoPros going down stages and stuff. But then when I've listened to GoPros before, when I've, like, got my even if I've just got my music in, it's so much quieter. So I think it, like, I don't know if it's because I'm focusing on something else or what, but when I don't have the chewing gum or my headphones in, like, I find that I'm almost a little bit more panicky. Like, I can hear myself breathing, and sometimes it's almost like deceiving. On like a race stage, I find, like, if I can hear myself breathing and puffing really hard, then, like, I feel like I've kind of reached a point where I'm like, oh no, I must be tired. Like, I'm at a point where I'm tired. But when I've got headphones and I can't hear myself, like, huffing and puffing and almost dying, so I can just keep pushing and just go into the flow of the music, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. I've never thought about that. Yeah, I've never ridden kind of downhill with headphones in. I've ridden on the road a little bit.
Yeah. Oh man, it's you're missing out. If you find a good playlist that you like, it's the best thing ever. Eh? Like riding down a sick flowy track, or like even a gnarly track, and just jamming to like some sick hip hop music, or some sick, I don't know what you guys in England like, some drum and bass or whatever. Like, it's so sick, man. And you get to the bottom and it's just like, yeah, it's such a fun time. But it's just as fun riding down a track with out headphones as well, but I've just found for me it works best when I got my headphones in.
I have to give it a go. Cool. Well, yeah, so coming back 2015 then, it was also, I think, your first year that you did some of the Crankworx events in, I think it was Rotorua and Whistler you entered that year. How did you find it? Did you warm to Crankworx straight away?
Yeah, well, that would have been my first Crankworx in Whistler. Was that the first Crankworx? Was my first Crankworx a Rotorua Crankworx or Whistler? I think it was
I think it was Rotorua at the start of 2015, yeah?
Yeah, it would have been Rotorua, yeah. That was the first pump track and stuff I did, and I think that was the first pump track that I got second place in as well. It was definitely a kind of a nice transition it was easier transition from going to BMX to downhill. It was easier going from like downhill to the Crankworx stuff, kind of having the BMX background already behind me for doing BMX for years, and kind of the downhill sort of transition for the downhill and the EDH races and stuff like that. But having the mixture of the downhill and the BMX, Crankworx is the perfect thing for a multi-disciplined athlete. And like with the pump tracks and stuff like that, it was sort of second nature almost from coming from racing BMX and doing head-to-head racing beside someone and kind of having to pump and not being able to pedal. That's all stuff you learn as a kid, and even when you're an adult, like racing BMX. So it was a comfortable transition, but it was still an eye-opener kind of getting all the people from like the Joyce Winchmans and, you know, Adrian Laron and Thomas Slovak and stuff like that. They're all people that have done like massive things in their disciplines of biking. And it was a comfortable transition, but it was an interesting one as well. It was an eye-opening one for me again. But as the years have gone on with Crankworx, it's been I've been so stoked to be involved in with the Crankworx family, man. It's such a cool vibe at all the Crankworx stops that I've been to, and yeah, I'm stoked that it's a thing that we can have in our calendar for each season.
Definitely, man. Yeah, we'll chat a bit more about the Crankworx stuff in a bit, but before we do that, 2016, back out there, a few World Cups, but also I think that was the first year that you went to a couple of EWS rounds. What was it that attracted you to EWS in the first place?
It would have been, I don't really know what, I was racing like a lot of New Zealand enduros, because in my hometown there's an event called the 2W Gravity Enduros, and they were kind of like quite a popular thing in my local town, and it was sort of a, I saw it, and back then it was a, they'd do like six stages, and you could catch the shuttle, like a bus, to the top of each stage. So like it was almost like a six downhill race, like six downhill runs that were timed, and then you got it like a, there was like a prize giving for it. So I saw, how I first saw enduro was like a, just like a six stage downhill race. But then like the, as the Enduro World Series was growing and getting bigger, the New Zealand stuff was getting bigger as well, and they were sort of transitioning to how the World Enduros were doing it, where you had to pedal to the top of the hills. And as I was getting older, I saw the World Enduros and stuff like that. And yeah, I just did a few gravity enduros that got kind of where you had to do the six stage pedaling, and yeah, I just enjoyed it, man. Like I think just from doing BMX and being as a kid riding around everywhere on my BMX in the town and getting to the BMX track and stuff like that, I built quite a good base fitness, and like just over the years of riding, I've just built a good fitness for myself. And when I was riding around and just riding the BMX track, I wasn't even thinking of training, and I didn't even think that I was, you know, like building anything for my future. But I think I built like a really good solid base, and yeah, it just helped me a lot in the enduros, with kind of keeping like being able to carry on throughout the whole day and kind of being still fresh for each stage and stuff like that. And I did surprisingly well at the local ones, and then a couple of the World Enduros linked up with a couple of the World Cups that I was doing. So yeah, my dad sort of said, "Oh, why don't we give them a go? Obviously, you enjoy them and you're doing good in them. So why don't you know, like, if you've got the energy and you can kind of do the different disciplines, then you might as well do it while you can, because you know it's." You only get a certain amount of years of doing it, so might as well do as much as I can in this time frame and try to kind of try some different things. And yeah, I did the enduros, and yeah, funny enough, that's kind of where I got more favoritism out of, and what I enjoyed the most, and that's kind of where I'm at kind of most of the time now.
Yeah, I think you had fourth place at Latwil and fifth place in Snowmass in the under 21s. Was it what? Yeah, what is it about the enduro that you enjoy?
Just the flex, like the not even the flexibility, but just the dynamic of it all. Like, you know, going into the mountains, and I think it's changed a lot now, even from when it all first started. I think it used to be like real alpine riding, where you'd went into the Alps for a day and you'd race just like real like natural stages. And now it's like the tracks are quite well, like they're well made, and there's a lot of natural tracks out there still, but they just turn into, from through the practices and stuff like that, they just turn into saturated tracks. And I was just at these enduro races, and it was pretty much like racing, depending on how many stages there were, like 4 to 7 downhill tracks. Like they were natural, they were steep, and they were sketchy, and you only got one run down them. Or like back, well, when I first did it, you could do as many runs as you could, as you wanted, but it was kind of like you had a certain time slot that you could do it in. So we'd do like 1 to 2 runs on each stage, and it was like the sickest thing that I'd done, like being able to go out and not having to wait in the line or whatever to get up to the stages, just being able to pedal up to the stages by yourself, and kind of you just having as much bike time as you could over the weekend. That's what I love about bikes and the World Cups and like downhill races. There was a whole lot of you know, I found waiting around, and you'd do 2 or 3 runs, and then you had the whole day free, and then you'd do your 2 or 3 runs before seeding, and then you do seeding run, and then you had another whole day, and then you'd do your 1 or 2 runs before racing, and then you do your race run. And even if you like went to a World Cup and you wouldn't even qualify, it's like you're doing like 5 or 6 runs over that whole weekend. Whereas at least with the enduros, if you're only doing say 6 practice runs and 6 race runs, that's still 12 runs there, and you're getting all that bike time in the meantime, riding up to the stages and all the liaisons, like some sick tracks even on the liaisons, getting to the like each stage and stuff of the enduros. And it's it's kind of, it's a massive open field for the World Enduro. Like they can kind of go whatever way they want with the sport, and that's what I find exciting with the Enduros. And I'm really looking forward to seeing kind of where it goes in the next few years, because it's it's a World Enduro, and they've got the prologues, you know, where we're racing down the streets of Colombia, and then they had that stage where we had to ride through the tunnel. And I don't know, like, it's literally like what makes an Enduro Enduro. Like, they could put anything they wanted in it if they wanted. They could make a 5-minute hill climb stage, and not saying that many people would like that, but they could do it. And, you know, that, like, that's the World Enduro. And they could make you race around a BMX track, or they could just throw anything they wanted in there. And that's what I love, is the diversity that they have, and they seem to be changing it up, and they love going to new locations. And I don't know, like, I guess it's cool going to all these, you know, like Fort Williams and Leo Gangs every year and stuff like that, and it's probably got a special place for some people. But, you know, if I'm traveling around the world each year, it's pretty cool to be able to see different parts of the world than going to the same locations every single year. And with the World Enduros, they're kind of just doing what I see me wanting to do with biking, is being able to see a part of the world and see parts of the world while I'm out there racing my bike, and kind of doing the best I can with the sport that I love. And yeah, it all just fell into place. And yeah, it's been so rad.
Yeah, it's an amazing sport for sure. But let's talk a little bit about 2017, because I think that was like a bit of a breakthrough year for you. So it started off well. It's New Zealand national champs time, and you've got a pretty competitive field at that point. You've got riders like Brooke, Blenke, Eddie, Wynn. Like, it's a pretty stacked field when you turn up to New Zealand national champs. Tell us a little bit about that 2017 national champs from your point of view.
Yeah, well, that was actually that was in Cadrona in 2017, and that was hectic, man. I thought I wasn't even going to race that, so I went down there and I did the practice and all that for the race, and I was staying with a family, and the practice went awesome, and I was like, as a junior going into the elites, and kind of my second year in elite, I was kind of just turning into, like, growing into myself and turning into a man. And I was actually wrestling with a little kid the night before the finals for the race, and this kid jumped on me and he broke my rib on my left side. Ooh. He broke one of my ribs, and like, it was so sore, man. Like, when I'd breathe or anything like that, I was like, oh no, this sucks. And when I'd walk or try lying down, it was like the sorest little feeling. And I woke up in the morning and I was like all tight, and I was just like, it was cold outside, and I was like, oh no, like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to ride. And I just went out into the car park and went for a ride on my downhill bike to see if I could ride properly. And it actually felt like I'd walk, or I'd like try sitting down or try breathing, and it like would hurt. But then I got on my bike and it felt better than if I was just trying to sit down or walk. So I went up to Cadrona and did a couple of runs, and yeah, it felt fine. And I just had to rub some inflammatory cream into it to try to like cool it down and kind of help it. But yeah, it worked out sweet. And I think the pain of the rib and stuff like that took away like the race nerves almost, and it actually worked out real sick for me. And back then, there was an awesome shuttle service, and like the awesome, there's awesome shuttle services all around New Zealand. And I just had lots of downhill time, and yeah, it all fell into place, and managed to walk away with my first elite New Zealand national title, which was sick.
Yeah, definitely. It's an amazing result in that crowd as well, with those riders. But is that when Specialized kind of approached you? Is that about that time?
Yeah, that would have been I was on Giant, and then from there it was pretty much straight after that before Crankworx Rotorua again. Uh-huh. They I don't know how it kicked off. It was either me or they came to me, and we might have been talking for a little bit before it. And then the New Zealand distributor dude kind of, he hit me up and he was keen to do something. And I went up to where they're based, and They had a couple of sick frames set up for me, and back then I was with Wide Open Distributors as well, and they're a distributor that sort of paved the way for like Sam Blinkensop and Matt Scalzi and Des Curry and Nathan Rankin and like heaps of Cam Cole and lots of New Zealand riders. So that was they gave me all the parts and all the gear and stuff to build up the bikes, and so I built up some sick specializers for the Crankworx and Rotorua, and that was my first race, and it was like it was a week before I got the specialized, and I had to race the Crankworx Rotorua Enduro World Series. So it wasn't the best timing from my end, as I was like, I was doing good in the enduros and the downhills and stuff like that, and here I was going into like the biggest race of my career to that point, like, you know, like doing good and winning the national champs and stuff like that, and then I just get these new bikes that I was like totally unfamiliar with, and it was like, yeah, it was the most, yeah, oh man, that Enduro World Series was, it was like torrential rain and mud, and my brand new beautiful pink and turquoise blue bike, it just got smashed with mud, and I was like heartbroken. Here I was with this new sick bike in the pits, like stoked on it and showing everyone it, and then I just came back after doing this Enduro World Series and I was just like disheartened. I was like, my bike was just like the ruts in the Enduro World Series, man. Like, I'm from Rotorua, and like you know, like local favorites and stuff like that. And obviously, people were stoked for me to go out and try to do good and get a good result. And I don't even know what I think I got like 30th or something like that. And the ruts were literally like, Rotorua is usually considered like hero dirt. Like when it rains, it's still grippy as. And yeah. I did this enduro, man, and the ruts were literally past the axle deep. Like it was. Insane. Like I was racing like with, I was in the same sort of lineup as like it was like, I'm pretty sure it was like Curtis Keane and stuff like that, and literally we'd just get to the bottom of the stage and we were looking and we were like, what the hell are we doing, dude? This isn't racing. And there were some people that were absolutely smashing it, but we were just like, there was a group of us and we were just like, oh no. But we still made a massive ball out of it. But there's photos floating around, and there's literally like, you can just see me like with my axles in the ruts, like fully in the rut, and my feet just scraping along the ground, and I was like, oh, my brand new bike just getting smashed.
fair play. So yeah, a tricky weekend that, but then like you say, followed up with Crankworx, and you did pretty well.
I think like with the downhill and the pump tracks and stuff like that, it all from there on it sort of worked in my favor and worked out good. It was for some reason with me, with my riding and stuff like that, I always find that like I ride better. Like it's the same with enduros, like my first one or two stages are always, I always build into the race, if you know what I mean. Like my first or second stage is kind of the slowest, and then I get faster and faster. And it's almost like that with some of my previous Crankworx as well. Like the more events I do, the last couple of events are my best ones usually. And it's it's weird, but it's just the way that I my body kind of copes or deals with the races. My body is I've always been someone that always has lots of energy, and I can obviously sustain it, and that's when I sort of come into my peak is in the later races.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that, because Crankworx is a pretty hectic schedule if you're racing a lot of it. Like, do you find that you need to put special focus on kind of recovery and rest and food intake during a week like that? Or are you someone that, like you say, maybe can just spring from one thing to the next?
Yeah, well, it wasn't until like last year, the year before, until I started even looking at nutrition and stuff like that. Literally when I was a kid and like with my first like couple of years, is like even my first year of Da Vinci, man, I was like, literally I thought I was like powered off lollies, eh? Like it was like my team manager Bastian, he would like come at me and he'd like be like, man, what are you doing? You're eating all this candy and like all this junk food. Like, you're a professional athlete. You got to like be like a professional athlete. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, this is how my body functions. I've always eaten lollies and chocolate. Like, this is how I know how my body works. Just leave me alone. And then like the last couple of years, I've been like, oh yeah, nah. Like, you do get these, you do get big gains from eating like the right food at the right time. And like, you know, the different proteins and carbs and eating the different carbs before racing. And, you know, like you did like, yeah, I was like a teenager, just still thinking I knew best when I didn't.
Fair play. But yeah, pump track, talk us through that, because you're in your hometown. It must be a lot of your sort of friends and family out there supporting. It must have felt amazing.
Yeah, man, to win the Rotorua Crankworx, my first one in front of the home crowd, it was the sickest thing. I felt like I was like on top of the world, eh? And especially I think in the final I was with Adrian Laron, and he was like, when I was first joined Crankworx and first started watching the pump tracks, it was like he was the pump track guru, if you know what I mean. That's what he does, is he's a pump tracker and he does like a bit of slalom stuff on the side back then, but he was known for pump track. And to take the win in Rotorua in front of the home crowd against, you know, someone of his caliber and that sort of discipline of mountain bikes, it was massive. And yeah, I wouldn't have chose to do it anywhere else, man. It was so sick seeing all the little kids and, you know, like even the parents getting behind me and chanting my name on the start line, and then all the little kids. That was like the first time when I was properly giving out a good amount of signatures and autographs. And I was just like, oh man, it was like that sort of, I think that Crankworx is sort of what really sprung my career as being a kind of put my place in being a professional athlete. And and yeah, from there it's just kind of kept going. And there's been some quiet times, you know, like when you're in New Zealand and it's an off season, but it's so hectic usually. And it's been from Rotorua, where it's always like when it's summer and in New Zealand, when it's winter over and we're not racing the overseas season, there's just always little like frother and kids and people that are stoked on riding in Rotorua and New Zealand, man. And to get the win in front of such a rad place and such a massive community in mountain biking here, it was such a good feeling.
Yeah, definitely. Like you say, it blew up your career, I think, in the public eye for sure. Going from taking the national champs jersey and then taking that win, do you feel like that added some pressure to you? So you've got this specialized thing, you've just taken two pretty big titles. Did that impact the way you approached the rest of that year?
Yeah, it did definitely. From then on, I thought I had like this kind of image to pursue, but I've always like this sort of like results to give myself. But I've always I like to think that I don't get real nervous or worry about races too much. Like by the time the race comes around, I've sort of done what I need to, I hope, to get a good result, hopefully, with the racing. And if you didn't, like, you've still put in the good amount of work, but you maybe for the next one you just need to do a bit more, or you need to kind of just figure out some different things in your training or something like that. But it did add pressure and stuff like that. But I feel like it added almost like a nice pressure of, by the time I did those two, I did the two results and stuff like that, I kind of, even though it was locally, I kind of proved to myself that I could do it, if you know what I mean. Like it wasn't unknown anymore. I'd proved it to myself and proven it to people. And from then on, I just had to kind of just believe in myself, because I'd already done it. But I've just got to learn to do it in other places or in other parts of the world or something like that. But it's all the same. You're still racing the best people in the world, or you're racing against, you know, like people that were at that race as well. It might have been your home race, but at the end of the day, it was still a race, and it's where I was comfortable the most on and that. But once, yeah, with time and with traveling and with being able to go overseas and race more often, you learn to just get comfortable with being uncomfortable almost, and that just becomes the normal comfortable, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that makes sense. Fair play. So how did you go then from that to the move to Da Vinci? Because with the specialized thing, was that kind of still a pretty much a privateer deal?
No, well, yeah, so that was, the specialized thing was like a weird, it was kind of like, it ended up kind of weird because I was with the New Zealand distributor, and then I was with, I sort of got kind of introduced to Dan, Hugo and stuff, and Benno Willett and stuff like that, the specialized managers. Mm-hmm. And they like accepted me in like with open hands and open arms, man. They were like awesome, and they kind of let me hang out with the enduro team. And at that time it was old Grubby and yeah, it was Jared Graves, Curtis Keane and Miranda Miller on the team at that time. And to me, like, I was hanging out with like the New Zealand pros and kind of doing my thing and stuff like that, but I wasn't really hanging out with a whole lot of overseas people at that time. And obviously it was Jared Graves and Curtis Keane with the On Track and stuff like that. They were like, yeah, they were superstars in my eyes, man. Like watching Jared Graves growing up as a BMX racer and a four cross racer, and then Curtis is On Track and has the results of enduro, and Miranda's sick results of downhill and enduro as well. Like, to get invited into that team role, like kind of to hang out with that team and stuff like that, it was a massive thing. And I managed to I think it was like the middle or the middle towards the end of season, I got like a couple of top 30s or a couple of top 20s. And the team, I got chatting to Benno a bit, and I actually like we started chatting and stuff like that, and we were gonna lock in a contract for the next year. And in that time, it was, yeah, Da Vinci came up and said that they had been talking to the New Zealand distributor and that they were keeping an eye on me throughout this year, like off the season of racing. And they came at me with an awesome offer, and I didn't know. I was chatting to Ben and stuff like that, and it was sort of uncertain when the contract was coming from Specialized. And I, to be honest, I was set with Specialized because they had offered me the first contract. Like, they offered me a role on, like, a position on the team, and I was set with it. I was like telling my mum and dad, I was like, yeah, like, I'm going with Specialized. And then it just sort of like went into an unknown. It's just sort of kind of fizzled out of between the Specialized coming at a contract with me and then Da Vinci coming at one with me. And at the same time with me racing the enduros, I saw Damien Oton, and man, he's the sickest dude to ever be on a team with, man. It was insane. He's like the most gangster French guy you'll ever meet. He's so funny, and he's just crack up. And when I got offered to be on a team with him, and I kind of had a chat to Bastien Majeur and David Burke, they're the Da Vinci, he was the Da Vinci global marketing manager, and then Bastien Majeur is he's like the team manager. And there was like, I met Annie, and she was the logistics lady, and Felix, the owner of Da Vinci, and I got kind of met them. And it was like a very family orientated like company from what I could see. And it was like, just from having a few chats to them, I could already tell that they were an awesome company. They weren't just worried about like results and stuff like that. They were worried about the image of the rider, and kind of they could see me as a bubbly, stoked person, and always had a smile on my face and stuff like that. And they kind of, I could just, whenever I would talk to them, I just felt like I could just be like a normal human. I didn't just have to be all about bikes. I could just have a rad conversation with them and stuff like that. And yeah, just the more I got chatting to them, it was, it felt natural. It felt like the natural thing to do. And that's just, yeah, who I ended up signing with. And man, who knows where I would be now or what team I could like would be on now. And there's always people jumping around teams and stuff like that. And I've never been that sort of rider. I've never been that sort of person. I've always been the sort of person that kind of stays loyal to my word and stays loyal. And if I'm with a company, I don't want to be a person that jumps around different teams every year and trying to get used to new components or new bike frames every bloody season. So I just, I've been with DaVinci and they sort of gave me their word that they were keen to kind of make me into a rider that they could kind of bring up and kind of turn into someone as a, like, put a career into until I'm 30 or 35, you know, like to make a name for myself for my whole career. And they kind of gave me their word that, like, if I was going to get the results and do media and stuff like that, that they would back me for that. And I have a great relationship with Bastion and everyone on the team. And obviously we've got Greg Callahan on the team now, and Damien's gone, parted ways with DaVinci after an awesome career with them. But I was so excited for this season to take place with DaVinci and the new rider Greg on the team, and kind of make some new memories and some great adventures with the team again. But with how coronavirus has bounced around the season, it sort of changed a few of the kind of everyone's plans for the season.
Yeah, definitely, man. So you mentioned sort of since you took on the DaVinci thing, you've started to focus on things like nutrition a bit more. Are there other things that you've changed since you've been kind of on that journey to make, like, in inverted commas, being more professional, I guess, about the sport? Like, how does your training approach change?
Yeah, well, my training I think up until maybe the middle of last year, I was always the sort of person that would overtrain. I've always been the sort of person that I've never felt like I do enough, even though I do more than, like, most people. Like, I'm always out there riding, and I'm always in the gym, and I'm always cross training. Like, I do, like, a lot of cross training and boxing, and I do a lot of, like, just CrossFit stuff, and I do, like, running, swimming, and biking. And I would often do my, like, what my coach would send me. He might send me, like, 5 hours training for that day, or 4 hours training for that day, which would be like a 2.5 hour ride, and then some stretching or some yoga, and then gym. And I'd do that, and then I'd find myself doing even more. And I was like, back then I had, well, even now I've got the energy to do it, but I've just realized now that, you know, like, it's, I've got the energy now, but in 5 months time or 6 months time, when I'm in the middle of the season, am I going to have the energy to sustain what I do? So I just sort of now, like, it's like a few people told me when I was younger, like Julian Dean, he was a Tour de France racer and stuff like that. Like, he said that most, like, pretty much every race and every good champion is made on the couch. So he was saying, like, anyone can train hard and people can train hard, but it's the ones that can rest and recover the best for their next training session or the next race. And I'm just trying, I haven't mastered it, and I'm not close to mastering it, but I'm trying to get better and better at just learning to rest.
That must be hard for someone that's as kind of, you know, energetic and upbeat as you are. It must actually be pretty hard to just sit down and not do a lot.
Oh man, it is. Like, I'm not ADD or ADHD, but I've got something in my body that just loves doing exercise, or like loves doing something. Okay, it's, I don't know what it is, but literally, like, the more training I do, like, even when I'm at the gym, the more, if I'm there for an hour, like, at the end of that hour is when I just start feeling good. And then I'll do, like, and then if I feel good, sometimes I'll do a boxing class, because they do, like, at Roto Vegas Boxing Gym, they do, like, they've got, like, boxing classes and then CrossFit classes, and they're kind of back to back to back. And, like, I'd go to the gym and I'd do my weight session and all my circuit, and then I'm like, oh man, I still feel good. Like, I feel so fresh. Like, I'm going to do a boxing class now. And then I, like, do the boxing class and I'm like, what? Like, I'm drenched in sweat. Like, my clothes are soaked, and I'm just like, man, oh, what? I've got a spare change of clothes in the car. I'll go get changed. I'll do this CrossFit class. And, like, I just literally, like, the more exercise I do, the more energy I get. And, like, the more pumped I get on myself, I'm like, yeah, this is awesome. Like, I just want to do more and more and more. And then, the, like, I don't know what it is, but I'm getting better at figuring out that I just need to chill more. But I don't know. As being a professional athlete, I've got to learn to relax more, and I've definitely learned that more as a being a professional. But I don't know. Yeah, I'm in. If I'm the sort of person that likes getting out and doing things, I'm not going to tell myself not to either, because that's stuff that you don't want to to look back when you're older and be like, oh man, I wish I did get out and do more of that or more of this. I don't want to be the sort of person that does look back after at the end of my, you know, like at the end of my exercising years or whatever, or if I'm ever stuck, you never know, like one day I could be stuck in a wheelchair or be in the position where I'm not able to do that stuff, and to be able to be at the age I am now and have the full energy to be able to do that stuff, I look at it as a positive. But for my professional racing career, I do see the sides where resting is a massive thing. But I'm still trying to learn a good in between. But we are getting a lot better at it, and I've learned that well from racing with the top guys, you know, like being with Jared Graves and Curtis and Damien Oton and seeing other guys. But like, man, Damien Oton, Papi, he's literally like the king of chilling, man. Like, oh, it's insane. We'll do an Enduro World Series, and I was the sort of person, we'll do an Enduro World Series, and then like the next day we might have like a chill day, and then the next 2 days before training would start for the next Enduro, I was like the sort of person like, oh, let's go out trail riding, like let's go ride, or let's go for a gym session, or go for a run. And like, Damien was just like, oh, nah, man, like, let's go get gelato and we'll just chill for the day at the beach. And I was like, what? Like, this is insane. Like, we're meant to be racing in a few days. Let's go train and stuff like that. And I was the king as well of like going and get banana splits or like getting bags of lollies and stuff like that. But I just always thought that we had to be training, like, or like riding to maintain our training and kind of get ready for the race. But the training by that point's the practice and the training has already been done by that point. And but I was just in full froth mode, and and Damien was just at home on the couch or like chilling, and he was like, yeah, I'll go out for like a 10-15 minute spin. And here I was like going for a run, and then I'd chill, and then I'd be like doing push-ups in the house, and then I'd be like chilling, and then I'd be like, nah, let's go for a ride. So I go for a ride, and I'd do like a whole bloody normal off-season training day before this massive race. And then I don't know, I am learning.
Good stuff. Well, I mean, 2019, some things started to go pretty well for you, because you took the win yet again at home in Rotorua at the first round of the EWS.
Yeah, man, that was a crazy one in front of the home crowd. It was interesting circumstances with Martin. He got the fastest time, but with the whole thing that went down with the him injuring himself and kind of the whole situation of what happened there, I managed to get the win on the paper. But that was insane, and to get a good result in front of the home crowd in Crankworx Rotorua, and that was like the best build up I've had for the season. I had Joel Harwood, the Blueprint Athlete Development. He's out of Squamish in Canada, and I was training with him that year, and he just had a good training program for me, and I kind of figured out myself as well what I how my body would react to some things and stuff like that. And I couldn't ask for a better start of the season, really. I was going into that race like wanting to get like a top 10 or 15, and I was just in a good place, and I knew the equipment and the bikes well by that point, and everything fell into place and worked out for the best and Crankworx Rotorua. And yeah, like I say, I couldn't have chose for it to go on any better or to have done it in a more perfect place with a perfect atmosphere of great people.
Yeah. Well, and you rode a short travel bike for that. Did you pick a 140 mil bike?
Yeah, that's right, man. Yeah. I had the Da Vinci Troy. So it was a large Da Vinci Troy, and I was usually riding the Da Vinci Spartan, but the Da Vinci Troy, just for Rotorua, is not known as being like the steepest, gnarliest place, and the Troy, just with the little travel, it was for my preferred bike for this and the Tasmania Derby round. And the Troy is such a sick bike. The Spartan, like, they're both really identical to ride, but just something I think coming from like the BMX background, I find sometimes the littler travel bike I can like ride better because I can throw it wherever I want it to and it's more playful. And coming from BMX, I'm used to littler bikes and stuff like that. And that's just the bikes that I was just as comfortable as on the Spartan, but that's just the bike that me and the team chose for those first rounds.
Yeah, fair play. Yeah, like you say, so second to first basically for Rotorua and then sixth to fifth for Tasmania with all the changing results and stuff. But the rest of the season kind of looks like it was a bit of a rougher ride for you. Talk us through what went on. Like, how did that momentum kind of carry from the first two rounds? Because it was quite a gap, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was massive. Like, obviously, I had the confidence from Rotorua going into Tasmania, and Tassie was like a surprise to me. I knew I had done everything I needed to get a good result, but you know, like I never thought I was going to be in the position that I was. But after proving to myself at that round that I could do it, there was a little break from there until Madeira. And Madeira, I was going on to be a good one as well, but it was just something with my training, or I trained and prepped really well for the first crankworks, and that was sort of my target to do like good at those races. And then, like I say, I just think it was like the middle of last year was when I something like I just got quite run down. I did Madeira and I didn't get the result that I wanted, so I went home, and I at that point I was kind of quite tired and kind of just like stale almost. And me and Cody Kelly, before Crankworks Rotorua, Cody Kelly came out and we were doing lots of riding together, and we were just like smashing each other in trainings pretty much. And then I would go to the gym and then I'd do even more. And like I was so hyped on doing an Enduro World Series and kind of coming off the best prep of my my like off season to coming into this race. I was so excited that I just think I did so much before those races that I just sort of blew the candle a little bit. And after Madeira, I came home and I felt stale, but I still was training. I was still pushing through it because I knew there was more races coming up. And that was probably the worst thing I could have done, to be fair. I did that, and then I got pneumonia in like the middle of June, July time. And I had pneumonia pretty much all the way through until the second to last Enduro World Series. So yeah, I had it in I had pneumonia in North Star, Whistler. I had like three or four of the Enduros. I had pneumonia and I had to pull out of a couple of them with it because it was just like I just couldn't recover between stages or peddling up to any of the races. And I was buggered, man. And like it just wrecked me. And it made me almost like look at it. Like I'm always a determined person, and I'm always like, if I get a bad result, I'm like fired up to go and smash the next one. But with the pneumonia, I just had no energy to be able to even have the want to go out and train sometimes. And then if I did get it, I'd go out and train and I'd get even sicker. And then like being so busy over crankworks, it just made me worse and worse. And then I got to the end of that season and I like cleared all of that up and stuff like that. And I had about a month off and just got rid of like all the sickness I had. And I came into this season and it was up until like December time that I felt kind of like still stale. Like I find like when you blow up, like I never felt anything like it. Like when you blow up or when you overtrain, it takes like months to come back to normal and to feel like you're the same motivation as what you had before you overtrained. And Yeah, it took me a few months to bounce back to 100% and have the full motivation to train again. And I was still training through not feeling motivated, but I just wasn't doing like the hectic stuff because obviously it was a long off season. And Damien was telling me that sometimes he has until like January off until he starts training again and stuff like that. So I wasn't too stressed about waiting until December to training again. And then I got into training and man, I was frothed. I was so stoked coming into to Crankworx Rotorua and stuff like that. And then there was just a couple of things that sort of didn't all fall into place. And like I had an awesome like build up for it. I had Jared Graves came and stayed with me for 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks in Rotorua, and then I went over to Aussie and stayed at his place for 2 weeks, and then I went to Medina for a couple of days and then came back to Rotorua. But with like travel delays and stuff like that, there was just a couple of things with the and things that didn't fall into place, and it kind of didn't really turn into the best Crankworx this year for me. And it's a shame because it's kind of been the only races that I've been able to kind of prove myself this year. But it's such a weird year, like there's still races happening and stuff like that, and with Crankworx being like the only proper race that happened really, it like proper races has been is like the crowd and like the races for the races, like the races were there and stuff like that. But I had a lot on my tank and a lot after having that break, and I had like a good off season and stuff like that where I wanted to come in and prove myself and show that I could do a whole season this year and show that I had the potential to get a good overall result. But with the way things have gone this year, I've almost like I'm riding most days still. I'm riding pretty much every day, and I'm training at the gym every day, and I'm running and swimming and stuff like that. But I'm just like, it's like almost like I felt lost because I was like, I'm so used to being over in Europe for months and racing at this time of the year, and I was in Rotorua for like in New Zealand for winter. Well, there was a period where I was in Tasmania for 6 weeks with my ex-partner, and I was hanging out there and doing some riding in Medina and Mount Wellington and stuff like that in Hobart. And Hobart, Tassie is the most like, there's Derby and Medina is recognized for riding and stuff over in Tasmania, but there is the biggest trail network apart from that, like Rotorua, Whistler and stuff like that, where I've been to, is a massive trail network. There is a massive trail network in Hobart and Mount Wellington that not like, unless you're a local there, no one really knows about it. It was insane. The community of riders and the amount of people that rode and the amount of tracks there, man, it's insane. Like so that kept me busy riding there for a bit and stuff like that. But then when I came back to Rotorua in the middle of July and up until now, like there was a few weeks there where I was just like, oh, what do I do with myself? Like, obviously I should just be enjoying the downtime and not racing and stuff like that. And I had the opportunity to go over to Switzerland for Zermatt and for these EWCs that are happening at the moment. But I was just sort of like, I was talking to my sister and my dad, and they were just sort of like, well, what's like, there's a pandemic going on at the moment. Like, what's the point of traveling? Is there even a chance that the races are going to all happen anyways? And so I had a good chat to my team, and they sort of understood the situation from where I was coming from. And obviously with Greg being already based over in Europe, he could sort of hold the fort up for the team, and he's doing his bit with the races now. And so now I'm just literally waiting until the New Zealand season kicks off. And I've got a race. I've actually got a CrossFit comp this weekend coming up. Jesus Christ, look out. Matt Fraser, I'm coming for you. And then I've got a couple of weeks off. And then I've got that first enduro that I was talking about, the first enduro that I ever did, the Giant Gravity 2W enduro, coming up in about 3 weeks time. And then I've got the a Phoenix Christchurch Gravity enduro and the Dodsey Memorial enduro. So I've got like three good sized enduros coming up at the from the middle to the end of October and beginning of November, and then I've probably got 15-ish New Zealand and Australian enduro and downhill races that I can do this off season before even Crankworx rolls around. So sweet. I'm sort of going to use the this off season, like what they're going to have in an off season is sort of my like season. I'm at a point now where I'm feeling fresh and I'm feeling good, and I'm just going to try to build up a real good base and just sort of come into these races and not give it a good amount, but I'm not going to do enough to blow myself up before the overseas season even kicks off. So I just want to get out racing. That's my life. it felt weird kind of. I love riding my bike and I love just for going out riding for the sake of it, but I'm a racer as well. I love training. I love when I'm out riding, I want to be training for something or doing like pushing towards something. And yeah, it's exciting knowing there's some New Zealand races coming up that I can go and do and just, you know, have fun and build up some good race head space before racing comes around again. Because if I did no New Zealand races, or if I only did one or two, it's a long time to hand off from racing from Crankworx Rotorua until, you know, March, April next year when there's races that might or might not happen. Who knows what's going to happen with next year with the current situation. But yeah, my hope's that the season's just going to run like normal next year and we can hopefully get some overseas racing in.
Sweet, yeah, for sure. Has it been hard watching the EWS events going on in Europe, or have you kind of at peace with that?
Yeah, I do like definitely the watching Zoom out. I had itchy feet for sure. I was like, oh, what? No, this is annoying. Like that's where I want to be. But at the same time, I chat to a few people and like seeing like Sam Hill and stuff like that not going and other people not going, and it's sort of like it's the way I see it is like it would have been cool to go over and race and get some good results, but at the end of the day, like if I'm going to an Enduro World Series, I kind of want to race with the best and the best in the world, and like it was cool that they're still doing it and it would have been cool to still be involved, but it's a long way to go with the uncertainty of if it's even going to happen, and with New Zealand being in a pretty safe situation with what's happening at the moment. And then I see like Richie and a lot of the American guys not going, and like a fair few Canadians not going, and a lot of Australians and Kiwis not going. There's a fair few Kiwis that still went, but yeah, I'm at rest of it for sure. Like I've still got another year next year with Union Da Vinci Factory Racing, and yeah, I just hope that I can kind of make that year a solid good year to keep the wheels turning and keep the professional dream alive.
Definitely, man. And because you guys have to isolate in a hotel, don't you, for a couple of weeks when you get back?
Yeah. So I had to do that when I came from Tasmania to came back to New Zealand in the middle of July. And yeah, that was definitely, you had a lot of time to think.
So you literally locked up in a hotel on your own, like pretty much.
I was in a hotel in like the middle of Auckland City, and me and a couple of people as we were coming in, we flew via Melbourne Airport in Australia to the Auckland Airport, and I met three rugby players from Germany and one from Germany and two from England, and we met at Melbourne Airport, and we were just sort of like, oh well, let's, like, we've been talking and hanging out, so if one of us has coronavirus, like we're gonna have it like anyway, so we might as well just say we're in the same bubble. And so we said we were in the same bubble at the airport, and we ended up getting to hang out for the whole 2 weeks in quarantine. So it sort of just put us at risk that if like one of them did test positive, then all four of us would have had to go to like proper isolation quarantine. So we got to hang out in the hotel for 2 weeks together. Like we were just jamming PlayStation and kind of doing that and stuff like that. But there was like, we would hang out maybe like 3 or 4 hours of the day, but the rest of the time, like, we were literally just sitting in the hotel by ourselves and sitting. I was sitting in my room. I was pretty lucky. I had a nice view and I had my trainer set up in my room and some weights, and I did some of the gnarliest workouts, like gym home workouts I've done in that room. I used a few towels and stuff like that, but that carpet, I don't think it is ever going to be the same. There was definitely some sweat built up in that room, but it was, I made the best out of the situation, but yeah, it was a long time even keeping yourself busy. There's only so much you can do in a room in 2 weeks. So I was just doing what I could to keep myself busy, but there's a lot of time to think about stuff. And yeah, it was something that was cool to experience and to see what other people were going through and how they were, like, how New Zealand or how the world was using the whole isolation thing and making, like, seeing what you had to do if you did want to travel and stuff like that. But yeah, I don't think it's something that I wanted to go overseas and rush back to, that's for sure. It's a long time to be stuck in a hotel, that's for sure. Even if it is, like, I was staying in a 4 to 5 star hotel, and it's luxury, but it's still just a room at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's like a smart prison, basically.
Man, that's exactly what we were relating it to, is like, it was almost like a luxury prison. Like, you could do whatever you wanted in that room, but it was literally like, it's still just a room at the end of the day. Like, I had a PlayStation and I had my bike and stuff like that, but even if I spent 3 hours on my bike and I played PlayStation, there's only so much time I was playing on that PlayStation until I'd get, like, squeery-eyed and, like, start squinting and be like, I just need to chill. And then I'd chill for, like, a couple hours, and then I'd, like, get up and I'd be like, now what do I do? And then my bibs were just soaked from training in, so I, like, didn't want to put them back on, hop back on the trainer on the bike, so I had to wait till the next day to get, like, the washing clean. And then it's just, like, I was leaning off the wall doing, like, wall push-ups, and I was, like, just sitting on my windowsill just looking down at the little stick figure looking people down in the city, like, thinking what they were going to do or stuff like that. I was just literally trying to find things to do. And it'll be interesting to see, like, how the other Kiwis or other people, how they post on their social media or whatever when they come back to isolate. But it's an interesting experience, but it's just something that we've got to take it on and do it if we want to travel this time this time and place at the moment with the pandemic happening.
Yeah, strange times, man. Well, we're getting close to the end of our time together, so we're going to hit up our final four questions. And the first one of those, if our listeners had £150, which is about 290 New Zealand dollars, to improve their performance on a bike, what would you recommend they go and spend it on?
A Kush Core. You'd want to throw a Kush Core in there. If you were just running normal tires and you wanted to improve to be able to go and ride with less, Kush Core. Like, if you wanted to go ride rocks and just send it down roots and rocks and not have to worry about anything, you can't beat having a Kush Core in your rear tire.
Yeah. Do you run just the rear one or do you run front as well sometimes?
That depends. For slalom or EDH or something, I would run Kush Core in front and rear just to have the stiffness in corners and stuff like that. But for enduro, I've ran the little Kush Core in the front and the big one in the rear, like the trail and then the downhill in the back for the enduros. But normally it's just in the rear. But it depends how gnarly the destination is that we're riding.
Yeah, and do you drop your tire pressures as a result when you got those in?
Yeah, well, generally, like, I usually run 23 psi in the front and 27 to 28 psi in the rear. And usually I stick to pretty similar pressures, but Yeah, it just depends. Like, it depends. If I'm riding slalom, I ride like 50. If I'm riding slalom, I'll ride like 50 psi in the rear and like 35 to 40 in the front. And sometimes if I've got a Kushkur in there and I want to run lower pressure, then like I'll run lower pressure because in the berm sometimes I'll feel like I'm getting stood up too much. Yeah. It just depends. But generally I run the same pressures with the Kushkur in as well. But it's kind of, I feel like a lot of people do drop their pressures with Kushkurs in, but... Man, I'm like, to be honest, I've learned over the years, I'm getting better at it, but I'm such a basic person when it comes to setup. Like, if I had 35 psi in my red tire or 25 psi, like, it'd surprise me if I knew that it was different pressure.
Fair play. Good admitting that one.
Yeah.
Nice one. All right. Second question. If you could wind the clock back and sit down with yourself age 16, what advice would you give him? Well, how old are you now first?
I'm 23. If I could look back and tell myself anything, it would just train, like, just literally, like, even though I've always trained, like, my first couple of years when I was riding, like, my first year in downhill and when I was racing BMX and stuff like that, I didn't really think that training was a big thing. I just thought, like, riding your bike was the thing. And it's really when I turned, like, 17, 18 that I realized that you actually had to, like, put in massive amounts of work if you wanted to make it your job or your profession, you know, like, I forget what it was. They said the stats not longer. It was like 0.02 or 0.07% or something. Make the biking a profession. It'd just be go back and kind of just train and put the work in to if you want to get to where you want to be and to also just do what I feel like I've done pretty well already is just take every opportunity you can to kind of do the different things in life and to kind of be able to do everything so that you don't look back when you're an old poop and you look back and you'd be like, bloody hell, why didn't I do that?
Yeah, fair play, good advice. Third question, if you could have a coaching session from anyone, who would it be and what would you want to learn from them?
It'd be Sam Hill, how to like read a corner or how to set up for like a sick inside of corners. Like that guy's insane.
Yeah, I don't know how that guy's brain works, but he's wired differently, I think, to everyone else.
Oh, man, the lines that he comes up are like, I've done some riding, like some trainings with him in the Enduro World Series and done a bit of, like, hung out with him. But, like, literally, like, he's like, you ride with him in practice and you're like, fuck, yeah, this is sick, like, this is so cool. And then, in racing, it's just like, it's just insane, like the lines that he rides in practice and then the race lines that he races and races is just like completely different, eh? And it's just like you can tell in practice he's just scoping everything out, and then like some people in practice are just going out and just sending in and trying to see how fast they can actually go down like a track where they're pretty much race blind. But yeah, man, the way that he sets up and like reads corners is insane.
yeah next level stuff for sure. All right, last question. What do you do every day that you feel benefits you?
Have my smoothie in the morning. I feel like that benefits me. That gets me, that kind of gets my body going and gets all the nutrients. And I need to have a good solid day of training and attacking the day. And I never feel satisfied at night unless I did 200 push-ups before bed.
Whoa, for real?
Yeah, man. I don't know what it. I used to be quite chubby when I raced. When I like just coming into my teenage years, and it's something that I've always done. I've always done push-ups before bed, and if I hop in bed, I'm always like fidgety or not ready to sleep until I do my push-ups.
Amazing. Fair play. I wouldn't go to sleep, I don't think.
Yeah, well, like I say, I don't know, my body's something just bloody is always on the go and wants to keep doing shit. I don't know.
Fair play. And what goes in the smoothie?
My smoothies. Oh, we got a good mixture, actually. We got this is you might want to write this down. It's a good smoothie. I put black currant powder. Okay. It's apparently been in the study and proven that it's good for recovery, and it's actually the New Zealand track cycling team did a test with it, and they reckon it and improve their recovery by 20 or 30% in a week. Whoa. And stuff like that, and it's real beneficial apparently. So I throw that in there, whether it's good or bad. Black currants are bound to be good for you. And then I put blueberries, blackberries, chia seeds, pumpkin seeds, sunflower seeds, oats, goji berries, a little bit of protein powder, some protein yogurt, some water, a banana, and some raspberries.
Nice. That sounds good.
Yeah, man, it's a killer smoothie. You got to make sure you put the right amount of water and yogurt in though, so it doesn't come out too grainy. Because sometimes with all the seeds and stuff like that, it comes out like kind of grainy sometimes. So you got to make sure you got to put a bit more water in to make sure that it's nice and smoothery, nice watery goodness.
Nice stuff. Cool, man. Sweet. Well, it's been super interesting chatting, man, and finding out more about you. But if people want to follow you through what will hopefully be a more normal race season next year, where's the best place for people to keep up to date?
For the best place during races, it would be the Union Da Vinci Factory Racing Instagram page for during race feed and stuff like that. And otherwise, just my normal public personal account, that is Keegan Wright MTB, so KEEGANWRIGHT MTB. And I'm always posting stories and some rad little Insta clips and stuff like that for to keep people up to date.
Nice. And we'll put links in the show notes to both of those. And hope you have a good off season, or on season as it maybe is for you guys in New Zealand, and enjoy getting back between the tapes in a COVID safe way. And hopefully we'll see you racing kind of on a more international scale next year when things are hopefully a bit more normal.
Yeah, man, for sure. It's uncertain times, but I'm pretty sure that next year is going to be an absolute baller of a season for everyone involved. And hopefully I get to see you overseas in Europe for some races, and we can have another yarn and chat some turkey.
Definitely, man. Nice one. Have a good day.
Legend, mate. Have a good one, eh? See you later.
All right, that's it for this episode with Keegan. I hope you've enjoyed listening. A massive thanks to We Are One Composites for supporting this episode of the podcast. Don't forget to head to wearonecomposites.com and check out what they have to offer. And as a downtime listener, you can use the code GIVER15 off for 15% off during September. That's GIVER15OFF. Be quick, there isn't long left. All the links you need are in the show notes for this episode over on downtimepodcast.com. If you fancy representing the show, then you can grab yourself a t-shirt or one of our brand new hoodies or sweatshirts by heading over to downtimepodcast.com/shop. Keep warm, look good, and help support the podcast at the same time. What's not to love? As always, the podcast lives on because of you lot listening and spreading the word. So please keep on doing what you're doing. Tell your riding mates, share the episodes on your social media, forward the newsletter to people who you think will enjoy it. Thanks to everyone who supports the show. I massively appreciate it. All right, we've got another awesome episode coming up soon, but until then, get out and ride.